You're joining us this week. We're in the second last week in our series in Joseph. We've been looking at the life of Joseph. So if you have a Bible or a phone or a tablet, you can open it now. We, in chapter 46, we're coming right to the end of the story now. It's our second last week. And we've gone through quite a few things. And I trust this morning again, we will be encouraged and strengthened in our faith as we look at the life of Joseph and the characters that we come across. But as we start, I know that for many of us, we have one foot in the holidays. It's soon holidays, and many of us will be traveling somewhere. We'll be going somewhere. I'll ask a randomly stupid question. Do you know what route you'll be taking? Do you know what direction you'll go when it comes to your holiday? Or have you even thought about it yet? Do you think it'll be the same route as last year? Because often there is these beautiful things called stop and goes that come up on the road, or detours that can significantly affect your travel time and particularly your enjoyment and the experience of the journey with a 2- and 4-year-old in your car. And there's multiple routes and multiple decisions to make, and maybe it's just a sign of my age. These are things you think about, and you start to investigate what route that you would take before you go on holiday. And if you don't, what happens? If you have to make real-time decisions in the heat of the moment, and you might make some poor decisions that have some severe consequences in how your journey goes. And I discovered this a few years ago. We were driving down to Plett, and I've never driven to Plett from Johannesburg, so I didn't realize that there's quite a few ways that you can go. And sort of when you get to Croft Renet area, you need to think about a few things. That you can go literally, that you can go off to Craddock, or you can go down, I think it's Kuriadu or Kuriado, and then both of those come in the back end of PE. Or if you've got some ground clearance, you can go more direct route over the mountain on the dirt road. And then if you miss it all, you have to go further down around the mountains and come in the back of George and Lasna, and then you have to come back to Plett. So I sort of had an inkling of this, but I didn't give it much thought. And we arrived in Croft Renet and two screaming kids, and Croft Renet, for a town of about 2-3 blocks, took us about 45 minutes to get through. It's Christmas. Everyone's going to the coast. And now you're at the end of your tether. You're frustrated. You've been sitting in the main street of Croft Renet for almost an hour. And as we came out the other side, we were supposed to hook a quick left down to Craddock or Kuriado, but there was bumper-to-bumper traffic. I was overwhelmed with the situation. I wasn't thinking, and we carried on going straight. We couldn't stop. And the next thing we knew, there was a fight, and we should go back. Should we go back? And stuff this. I'm so far down the road, I'm not going back. And we carried on straight, and we ended up having to go all the way around Nasna and George and track back to get to Plett. And what I should have done is I should have taken the time to look closely at the map, and I should have stopped to remind myself of where we need to go. And I didn't, and I forgot. I forgot where to go. And we took a longer route, and we suffered the consequences. And I'm sure many of us have similar experiences with our families or with our friends traveling somewhere, and we haven't thought through of how we really want to get there, and we don't look at the map properly, and we end up taking some interesting travels. And our lives are sort of a metaphor for our lives. Life is like that. We on a journey in life with a destination that we want to get somewhere, and life is full of stop and goes. Life is full of some detours. Life is full of potholes and things that might come up and might take us off track. We all have a purpose. We all have some idea in our lives. We want to achieve something. We want to get somewhere. We're journeying towards some sort of destination. And I think we've learned along the way that bad choices, not thought through, can result in some severe consequences. So the question is, as we're looking at Joseph today, is how do we really then begin to navigate life and its complexities? Because you are confronted with lots of choices. There's lots of things that you have to decide which way you should go or what you should do. And how do you know that you're moving in the right direction? How do you know that you're heading towards the correct destination? How do you know that you're making the right choices? And I think, as I've reflected on this, the biggest mistake, one of the biggest mistakes that I've made, and I think that we're all the same, I think one of the biggest mistakes we make in this journey of life and making these decisions about where and what we should do and where we're headed is that we forget. And we forget to walk in step with God. We forget to walk in step with God, and as a result, we don't know the plans and the purposes of God for us. I think one of the greatest struggles and the greatest mistakes we make in our Christian journeys is that we forget. We forget to walk in step with God. And the result is, if you don't walk in step with God, it's one of two things. You either rush on ahead of God, you way out in front of God on your own plans and your own mission and your own purposes, and you're pressing on. Or you could be lagging behind, and you're just there in apathy or indifference and just sort of bouncing your way through life with no real purpose or plan. But in both cases, whether you're rushing on ahead out of step or lagging behind out of step with God, you're walking outside of the purposes and plans of God. You'll be outside His plans and purposes. We will be living according to our own steps, not God's steps. And I think our greatest mistake in the journey of life is that we forget to walk in step with God. And this results in multiple bad choices in life that can take us on detours, that can derail us and take us to destinations that we should never be heading towards. And this is a tension I think we feel all the time. How do I walk in step with God? How do I know that I'm making the right steps and where I'm going? I mean, just some examples. Relationally, who should I date? Who should I marry? We feel these pressures at various stages in our lives, that I might be getting old and I'm still single and I'm desperate to get married. Or who can I and who should I date? And we might be pressured into making decisions that would take us into relationships and situations we should never get into. You see, we feel this tension relationally. We feel it vocationally. How many of us are asking all the time, what should I do? Should I be doing what I'm doing now? Where should I work? Where's my purpose and meaning? What should I be doing? And there's these constant daily life tensions of choices and decisions. Financially, what should I spend my money? How much money should I have? How much money can I make? What do I need to do to make more money? We feel the stresses financially. Residentially, where should I live? I think for a certain subset of our population, immigration, should I leave? Have you stopped to consider, are you walking in the steps of God if you're looking at various options outside of the country? Maybe God has called you for this time, in this place, for His purpose. Can you see that we can rush on ahead in fear? We can rush on ahead in anxiety. We can rush on ahead in our ignorance or our self-centered purposes and plans for our own lives. And we haven't yet stopped to consider, are we walking in step with God? And we have these stresses and pressures. We feel them socially. How do I engage the world around me? I live in South Africa. It's a complex place. There's so many injustices and inequalities. What's my role? How do I engage? What do I do? What is my purpose? Do I just leave or do I stay? What is God saying and how do I walk in step with God? And you can see, even spiritually, how does my faith, how does my relationship with God interact with all of these things? How does it influence me that I might walk in step with God? And we quickly forget. And we're lagging or we're rushing and we might be heading off on detours in places and things that we shouldn't do. And this is, I think I've touched on something that is not unique to me. In some way you could identify in one or many of these areas. So how do you deal with it? How do you process them? What do you do? How does your relationship with God help you? And our text today, I think, is going to help us. In our text today, we have a situation. In the story of Joseph, it's that time where the family is going to be reunited. And Joseph is called to bring the whole family to Jacob, his dad, bring all the brothers, bring the whole family, and come down to Egypt. But this creates a conflict. This creates some anxiety. It says it creates some fear for Jacob because he has this personal desire, and often it's our personal motives, the things that we want so desperately. And he has this personal desire to see his son, and he hasn't seen him for 22 years, and he's suffered this loss. But at the same time, that means he needs to go to Egypt. And going to Egypt is symbolic of stepping outside of God's plans and purposes. Remember, God had promised them this land of prosperity and blessing that they must live in this land. But now he has to leave that land and go to Egypt, and he's conflicted. Like, I want to see my son, but then if I do that, I potentially might be stepping outside the steps of what God has for me. So he has this turmoil and this conflict, and he has to make some choices. So what does Jacob do? So how does he go about making these choices? So let's read the passage. It's in Genesis chapter 46, and we're just going to look at the first four verses this morning. So Israel set out with all that was his, and when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, "Jacob, Jacob, here I am," he replied. "I am God, the God of your father," he said. "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. And Joseph's own hand will close your eyes." It's a wonderful word that God speaks into Jacob's life. First thing I want us to notice there in verse 1, it says, when he reached Beersheba, he offered sacrifices. Jacob does something significant in this process. He stops. He pauses for a moment. They literally camp. And he offers sacrifices to God. What's he doing? I call this this is my own term. I call it the principle of remembrance. Here's a key principle to take away this morning. If you want to live in the plans and purposes of God and know the fullness of his promises for your life, you need to remember. If you want to know the plans and purposes of God for your life and live in the fullness of his promises and blessings, you need to grasp this principle of remembering. We need to do this because we're forgetful people. Just like I forgot on my way to Plett, I forgot to look at the map, I forgot to remind myself in the moment of what to do, and the resultant effect is I lost my way. You need to develop a regular rhythm of remembering. If you want to live in the plans and purposes of God, you need to grasp this principle. The name Beersheba is significant. It means the well of the oath. And Jacob's grandfather Abraham, Jacob's father Isaac, and now Jacob, they all at stages had lived in this area at Beersheba. And they had all offered up sacrifices to God at Beersheba. And they had all entered into covenants and oaths at Beersheba. This is a significant place of remembrance. It's not just a place. You've got to pause for a moment and remember what's going on here. And if you look at Genesis chapter 21, I think it's up on the screen, verse 32. He has Abraham, his grandfather, who first comes to Beersheba, and he enters into a covenant with the local people so that he could live in the promised area that God had given him. After the treaty he made at Beersheba, Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called on the name of the Lord, the eternal God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines for a long time. So it's significant that his grandfather Abraham had entered into an oath to live in the promises of God, the land and the blessings of God. And they'd lived there for generations. God then appears to Isaac later on at Beersheba, where he reconfirms the promises that he's made to Abraham. He reminds Isaac, "Remember what I said to Abraham." And this is what he says in Genesis 26, verse 23. And it's almost identical to what we read this morning. "For there he went up to Beersheba, and that night the Lord appeared to him and said, 'I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you, and I will bless you, and I will increase the number of your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham.' And Isaac built an altar, and there he called on the name of the Lord, and there he pitched his tent, and there his servants dug a well." Very significant moments in the lives of Abraham, in the life of Isaac, and now in the life of Jacob. Moments of remembrance. And they offer up sacrifices. What they're doing is that they're engaging with God. They're worshiping God. They're enjoying God. They're giving thanks to God. They're being reminded by God of who He is and what His promises are. They're in the moment, in the presence of God. They're worshiping a sacrifice. They're giving thanks and praise to God. And they're seeking out God. And here we have Jacob offering up the sacrifice. Here's the picture. Jacob is sitting under the tamarisk tree of his grandfather. Here's Jacob sitting, drinking from the well of his father. And a lifetime of memories are flooding back to him. My dad planted this tree. My grandfather planted it. My dad planted this well, dug this well. And he's sitting there. What's happening? He's remembering the promises of God, the purposes of God, the plans of God, the blessings of God, how God has brought them in and given them this land, and how for generations they've flourished in this land. Under the tamarisk tree of his grandfather, out of the well of his father, God is reminding him again and again. So the question then for us is, do you have a daily Bathsheba? Do you have a place that you go to every day to drink from the well of God's word? And sit under the tamarisk tree and rest in the shade of God's grace and sovereignty and power. Do you have a daily Bathsheba where you can go and be reminded? Building up your faith again, lest you forget and lose your way. We need the principle of remembrance, where we need to build our faith and our confidence in God. We need to be reminded. That's what Jacob's doing. That's what Abraham did. That's what Isaac did. That's why it brings us to this point of Bathsheba, this point of memory of what God has done for him and the family throughout the generations. You can just see the picture of him relaxing there, just going through all those holidays, all those fun, all the things that happened. God, every step of the way with us. And he offers up thanksgiving sacrifices to engage with God. How else would Jacob know what to do next if he doesn't stop and remember this faithful God, this God of his promise? How else would he know what to do next? He's deeply troubled. It says, do not be afraid. That means he's fearful. You don't tell people, do not be afraid, if they're not scared. Jacob is deeply emotionally troubled. He has fear. He's full of anxiety. He's conflicted. He wants to go and see his son. But here's the thing. It's literally, geographically, out of the promises of God. Bathsheba is the southernmost point of Israel. It is the last yard, the last centimeter of the promise. And if he steps out of Bathsheba, he's literally, not just spiritually, he's literally stepping in the opposite direction to where God has called his family. This guy is conflicted. And this is what he does. He remembers. I mean, there's so many things going on. He's probably fearful for his children. If he goes to Egypt, Egypt was an idolatrous country, and they might forget themselves, the God of their fathers. They might lose and forget the promise of the land. So he's fearful for the future of his kids and the consequences that it might have for them. He's fearful and worried about his personal dying in a land that's not in God's promise. He's lived faithfully all these years, and he might end up outside of God's promise. The historical fear, if you go back in the story, God had expressly prohibited his father Isaac. He said, do not go to Egypt. There was a famine, just like it is now, and Isaac wanted to go get food, and God said, don't go. Abraham, his grandfather, went to Egypt, and it turned out terribly. So he's historically, he's like, the last time my family went, it went bad. And God has said, I shouldn't go, but now I want to go. I want to see my son. There's the logical fear, like there's a famine, it makes absolute sense. And how do we rationalize our choices every day with our logic? Oh, well, it makes sense, I should go. But he pauses to remember. There's the fear of his age. He's 130 years of age. He's got to cross the desert. This is no easy task. There's no E-class Mercs. He's going on the back of camels and donkeys and chariots things. This is a serious consideration at 130 years old. To get across the desert. He's thinking, what do I do? And you can see this is so complex. And this is a critical moment in history. You and I are sitting here today, if you're a follower of Jesus, because Jacob paused to remember. This is the promise of God that he would be a blessing to the whole world through his family. And we know the story goes, they go to Egypt, God brings them out, he brings them back to the promised land, and the line of Jesus comes through the family of Jacob. This is redemptive history. You and I are sitting here today because Jacob paused to sit under the tamarisk tree and drink from the well of his fathers. See, the only solution and the greatest thing that you can take away if you want to proceed in the purposes and plans of God, grow in confidence and faith, and trust in God, is you need to stop and remember. And God knows this, because when he first makes the promises in Genesis 12, now we're in Genesis 46, on 10 separate occasions, he appears to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he repeats almost verbatim the promise. Why? Because we forget. And if you go look at it, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob took some detours. And God comes. This is the way to go. This is what I've promised. Stick with me. And he comes and he gives them this word. And right in this moment, he's giving Jacob the words again. Remember. So what does he ask him? What do we need to remember? So the first point is the principle of remembrance. And he asks them to remember. I think there's two big buckets, and you can go and unpack it for yourself. But I just want to touch on two big buckets of what we need to be remembering. And it's, firstly, he speaks into what I call the person of God. If you look in the beginning of verse 3, it says, "And God spoke to Israel in a vision at night, and he said, 'Jacob, Jacob.' 'Here I am,' he replied. 'I am God, the God of your father.'" The first thing that God reminds Jacob of is who he is. And you note, he doesn't just say, "I'm God." There's an emphasis here. He takes it one step further. "I am the God of your father. I'm the God of Abraham. I am the God of Isaac." Immediately, for Jacob, this is somebody that he knows. This is someone he can identify with. This is someone whom he can trust. And what God is doing is opening up a window of remembrance for Jacob to peer into and to be reminded that this is the God of my fathers. This is the God of the promise. This is the God of faithfulness. This is the God who's provided for us every step of the way. This is the God who sustained us. This is the God who's protected us. This is the God who has cared for us throughout every generation. This is the God of my fathers. And this is the God who I have been taught about. This is the God I've come to know. This is the God I've come to love. This is the God I've come to trust. And you can look around the land at all the altars and all the rocks and all the trees and all the wells to be reminded that this is the God of my fathers. This is the God of the promise. This is the God who said he would make us into a great nation. This is the God who promised to be with us. This is the God who said he would establish a land and we would be a blessing to all the world. God is, there's a purpose that I'm the God of your fathers, and Abraham and Isaac. And it's just wonderful. We need to get this picture of God, this beautiful picture. And there's a couple of nuggets in here that I just want to share with us just to encourage us this morning. And if you're losing faith, to be reminded of who God is and how wonderful he is. It's that God is a personal God. Notice how it says there, Jacob, Jacob. Jacob, Jacob. He knows Jacob by name. It's a personal God. God knows you by name. The name is significant. In biblical context, the name was the very essence of who you are. Your name was your identity. Your name meant something. God is speaking deeply into the essence of who Jacob is. He's personal. He knows everything about Jacob. He knows who he is. He knows what he's done, and he loves him. This is a God, a personal God. He's not removed. This is a God who does not understand. This is a God who identifies with you. He knows what you've done. He knows who you are. Remember, this is the God who made you. Scriptures tell us he put you together with his very hands. Ephesians tells us you are his workmanship. You are his work of art. You are his poetry, is the Greek word there. He's a personal God. You hear that this morning. The very essence and being of who you are, God has put you together. And if you're losing faith in a way that God is removed or distant or doesn't care or doesn't know, the truth is He does. And if you don't know, He did it at the expense of His own Son to be with you. This is a personal God. He's also a caring God. He says, do not be afraid. You know, this is the God who, at His very word, sustains the whole creation, yet He's able to stop and know exactly what Jacob needs. And He says, don't be afraid. I mean, God is holding the whole world together right now, yet He's able to be personally engaged with you to be able to say, don't be afraid. This is a God who cares. In His anxiety, in His fear, in His angst, in His concerns, in His dreams, in His desires, in His purposes, what He wants for His life, God is deeply involved and God cares and God is concerned. And as you sit here this morning, you might need to be reminded again, God deeply cares about you, your life, and your circumstance. As I said, so much so that He's prepared to lose His own Son. That's how much He cares about you. Who would suffer a paper cut for somebody else? But God's willing to lose His own Son to demonstrate His love for you. We need to be reminded this is God. The God of the promise. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God of faithfulness. The God who cares. The God who's intimately involved. And He's personal. And He gives us this great example in the passage just to reaffirm this. For me, this is just a beautiful little touch at the end of the verse. What is Jacob's deepest longing? What is his deepest desire? What is his dream? That he would see his son. They would be reunited, right? And right at the end, we see this caring, personal, involved God. Look what he says. Joseph's own hand, your son, his own hand will close your eyes, meaning he will be with you at the very end. When you die, he will wipe his hand over your face and close your eyes. This is so incredibly profound. This is so incredibly deep. You need to hear this at the depth of your heart this morning, that God knows and He cares about the deep pain and suffering and loss that Jacob went through for 22 years. And He says, and He speaks to his hurt. He speaks to his pain that has been growing for so long. In essence, what He's saying to Jacob is, no longer will you suffer loss. No longer will you have to carry the burden of this pain. No longer will you have to be separated from your son. This is, God cares. God is personal. And God is involved. And He intervenes to the minutiae of someone's heart. And He does the same for you and for me this morning. No longer will you have to suffer the pain and the burden, He says to Jacob. He speaks right to Jacob's deepest longings and He shows us who he is. That this is a God who actually does lose his son so that Jacob doesn't have to lose his son. This is a God who does actually lose his son so that you and I can become sons and daughters and live in the promises and blessings of who God is. This is a God who does demonstrate his love for us through loss so that we might have life. And if you're wavering, if you're doubting, if you're losing faith, I want to remind you again this morning, this is the God who cares about you. This is the God who's personal, and this is the God who says to Jacob, no longer will you have to suffer the loss. No longer will you have to carry the burden and the pain. And that's what God comes to say to us this morning. Remember, I've lost so that you don't lose, and you might live in my purposes and my plans that I have for you. It's this beautiful picture reminding us of the person of God. And see, the key principle here, if you want to live in the purposes and plans of God, it's not just remembrance, is that here's the second big takeaway, is you will never know the will of God unless you're growing to know God Himself. You see, all of us want the will of God, but we don't want God. We don't want to have to build relate. We just tell us what we must do. And what we're seeing here is, as you grow in knowledge and understanding and interaction and relationship with God, the logical outworking is that you get to know God and His plans and purposes, and you get to walk in and step with God. And that's the point of the sacrifice. See, the sacrifice isn't to get the will of God. You might be mistaken, or He sacrificed so that God could tell Him. The point of the sacrifice is worship. He's praising God. He's worshiping God. He's enjoying God. He's savoring God. He's giving thanks to God. He's reflecting on the glory of God, and he's developing an intimacy and a relationship in the presence of God. And as a result of him growing and experiencing God, so he gets to know the will of God. So we need to be growing daily in our relationship with God, enjoying God, pursuing God, experiencing God, that we might know the will of God. And not just checking in from time to time. You'll never know the will of God unless you are growing to know God Himself. And that's what Paul says, doesn't he, in Romans 12? What does Paul say in Romans 12? Offer yourselves as living sacrifices. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you might know the perfect will of God. And that's what he's saying here. The sacrifice is to offer yourself daily to God in relationship, being reminded of who he is and what he has said, so that you might grow in faith and confidence and joy and satisfaction, and thus know the will of God. So remind us this morning. You may be losing your way. You may have lost your way. You may have lost faith. You may have made some bad decisions. You may be going in directions or contemplating things that could result in consequences. Here's the thing. God knows. God cares. God's involved, and he wants to remind you, come back. Look again. Come drink from the well. Sit under the tree. Find rest. Be encouraged. This is who I am. It's beautiful. The second thing we need to remember is the promise of God. Jacob can only go in confidence when he knows the promises of God. And God gives him some promises. Verses 3 and 4. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. And then he says, I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. See, there's the promise of a future. I will make you into a great nation. He's saying, don't worry, you won't be wiped out. You won't disappear off the face of the earth. You won't be destroyed. I'm the God of the promise. I have promised that I will make you into a great nation. And if you step out the story, we know it's true, right? At this point, when they get to Egypt, there's about 70 of them. By the time they leave captivity 400 years later, my history is a bit poor. It could be anywhere from 600,000 to 2 million and they make it to the promised land. That's an exponential growth. And how many Christians are there in the world today? 2 billion? God says, I will make you into a great nation. There's the promise of a future. And he's encouraging Jacob. He's envisioning Jacob. He's strengthening Jacob with this wonderful picture of what he's going to do. And the encouragement to you today is that you have a future. God has a plan for you. God has a purpose for you. He has a life partner. He has a life for you and steps for you to walk in. And to be encouraged and to go to the scriptures and unpack that further. But there is this promise of a future. That this morning that you can sit here in confidence that you have a future. Ephesians tells us in chapter 2, I think it's 9, he says that I have prepared good works for you to do in advance. That God has a purpose. He has a future. Then he says the promise of presence. I will go with you. It's this one that the God of all creation goes with you every step of the way. That's why the biggest mistake we can make is we walk out of step, ahead or behind. And it's this wonderful picture, like Jacob will not go unless God goes with him. And it's this theme throughout the Old Testament. When they're wandering around the desert in confusion, every time they engage with God, what does Moses say? I cannot go unless you go with me. What does Joshua say? We cannot take the land unless you go with us. And there's this promise of presence. If God sends you, he goes with you. If God calls you, he goes with you. He doesn't do what if he asks you to do it, he goes with you. And in this knowledge, Jacob can go and he can engage. It's this presence of God that you can know with faith and confidence that God is with you. that if surely you enter into the valley of death, with God will go with you. Because God was raised to life, surely God will take you out of the valley into life. What does he say? Abide with me, remain in me. Apart from me, you can do nothing. The promise of God is I will go with you. And we're required to walk in step with him that we might enjoy and know the power of God's presence. And then he says the promise of certainty. I will bring you back again. That nothing will be lost. That I'm a God of my word. That if I say it, it happens. And we know it happened because they came back. And they conquered the land. And they're living in the land. And that blessing has now gone from the land to the world. That God was faithful to his promise. That Jesus comes, that we might sit in the blessing. There's this certainty, the promise of certainty that God will not fail. And these promises need to become the foundational bedrock of building faith in our life. That the promise of the future, the promise of the presence of God, the promise of the certainty of God builds faith. It builds confidence and it focuses you on the person of God that you might then grow in obedience and confidence and step out in the plans of God. And we need to remind ourselves when we're in doubt and when we stray, when we're losing step, whether we're rushing ahead or lagging behind, we need to remind ourselves that we have this promise of a future. Slow down. Walk in step with me. Where is God? I need to be in his presence. I need to be at the well. I need to be under the tree, receiving. And then enjoy and rest in the certainty that God will do what he's promised to do. And that's why we have a cross in the Bible. It's like this indisputable historical fact that God has done what he said he would do. And then we can hold on to that as a guarantee. And once Jacob has been reminded, once he's dwelt on those promises, the very next verse, in verses 5 onwards, it says he simply leaves Bathsheba with his family and goes to Egypt. He knows. And he can go with confidence. And this morning, you might be facing your own Egypt. You might be full of fear. You might be full of anxiety of the future. You might be confused. You might be frustrated. I don't know what you're feeling. I don't know where you are. You might be experiencing some inner conflict. You have a deep longing and a desire for something and it's not coming about, resulting in deep dissatisfactions. I don't know, but you could, whatever your Egypt might be, don't rush on ahead in impatience. Don't make some silly decisions that could suffer the consequences. Or don't just lose faith in apathy and indifference and just check out. Look again this morning. We need to pause and be reminded of the person and the promises of God. We must truly know God first before we can truly know God's will. And we need to pause and hear the voice of God. And the voice of God this morning, I trust, is calling your name. Jacob. Jacob. Can you hear me? Here I am, Lord, we should respond. Here am I, he says. And this is the personal God who knows you. This is the personal God who cares about you. This is the God who lays down his life for you so that you might have a hope and a future. This is the God who orders the stars in the sky. This is the God who's working all things for your good. This is the God in whom we live and move and have our being. This is the God who knows everything from beginning to end, the Alpha and the Omega. This is the God who sustains every second of our lives by his word. Every breath that I take is given by God, and we should stop before we lose our way and be reminded of who he is. That this is the God that we can have faith in. This is the God whom I can trust. This is the God who loves me. And this is the God who is working all things for my good all the time. And we should stop to drink from the well of his word. And we should stop to rest under the tamarisk tree of his sovereignty, power and grace, and find rest to be literally carried in step with him. When Joseph goes into Egypt, he doesn't walk. He's carried by his family. It's this picture of that we can't, that we need the grace and the power of God to carry us into the plans and the purposes of God, and we should pause to drink it in. So I want to remind us this morning as we finish now that the team can come up. I thought I'd just read a psalm just to put this into practice. Psalm 145. So just take it in. reflect. What are we doing in Psalm 145? We're remembering the promises of God. We're remembering the person of God. And I'm trusting that you would hear the words of God and he might speak. I don't know what your Egypt is right now, but let's just let the words of God speak for himself. The Lord is faithful to all his promises. So this emphatic statement. The Lord is faithful to all his promises. It's a given. What God has said, he's faithful to. And he's loving toward all he has made. You might be doubting the love of God towards you through the circumstances of your life or decisions that you've made or whatever the consequences are. God is loving towards you. He's leaning towards you. He's not leaning away. Receive that this morning. The Lord upholds all those who fall. You may have fallen, but he comes, this is the beauty, he comes to pick you up. He comes to hold you. Receive that this morning to be reminded that the Lord upholds all, like not some, all who fall. And he lifts up those who are bowed down. If you come to the well, you come to the tree, he lifts you up. He holds you, he strengthens you. And the eyes of all look to you, and you give them their food at the proper time. What you need, God gives you at the proper time. Come to him. If you feel like you're lacking, if you've lost out, be reminded this morning that when the eyes of those who look to the Lord, he gives it to them at their proper time. Maybe you need to look again this morning. Look again and receive. You open your hand and you satisfy the desires of every living thing. All satisfaction comes out of the hand of God. Every living thing is satisfied by God. Turn away from other satisfactions. It might be your moment this morning is repenting and turning from other satisfactions back to the deepest satisfaction that comes from the hand of God. The Lord is righteous in all his ways and he's loving towards all he has made. He's righteous, like he does the right thing. He's not going to make a mistake. His ways are righteous. His ways are the best ways. That I'm not God. You might think you're God. You might be ahead of God. You might be rushing out of step. And you need to be reminded this morning that his ways are righteous, mine aren't. I don't know everything. He does. And on top of that, he's good and he's kind and he's loving. So he will do the right thing and he'll work it out. The Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. It's the presence of God. He's near to you. He comes to you right now. You can speak to him and call on him. He fulfills our desires of those who fear him, and he hears their cry and he saves them. As you cry this morning, as you call out to God, he hears, he saves. He's faithful to do that. Maybe you need to cry out to the Lord. Maybe you need to be saved and be reaffirmed again. And the Lord watches over all who love him, but all the wicked he will destroy. He's watching over. What wonderful reminder of God and his promises. And it's all over this word. The Bible's full of it. Just come to this well and drink and be reminded daily of who God is and his goodness to us. Let's pray. Father, we just want to receive the fullness of who you are. We want to love you. Let's just pause for a moment and just reflect on those words of Psalm 145. It says, those who cry out to the Lord, he hears. So you can speak to the Lord. It might be a celebration. It might be heartache. I don't know. Have a moment before we rush off. Don't rush over the boundaries into Egypt. Stay in the promised land for a moment and just engage with God. Lord, what would you say to us this morning? Lord, you are the personal God who cares, and I just pray that people will hear the voice. Jacob, Jacob, deep within. Reassurance, confidence, a reminder, an encouragement. Strengthening our faith. Hang in there. I'm making things right. It's for your good. Lord, would you speak into us, I pray. Jacob. enter into the hearts, I pray, Spirit. Sense, remind us, Lord, some of us may have made bad choices. Some of us may be living in the aftermath of our consequences. God knows, God cares, and God's making things right. And He can heal, just like He did for Jacob when He says, I will put Joseph, your son, will put his hand over your eyes, that no longer will you have to suffer loss and pain, that I am the God of reconciliation. I am the God of redemption. I am the God of healing. And I can restore and renew your hurt and your loss. Hear that this morning. Turn, receive, ask. Offer yourself as a sacrifice.